Welcome to the Growing Rural Podcast, where we focus on all things rural in South Carolina. We will discuss topics on healthcare, economy, education, and the unique culture that is our rural state. This podcast is supported by the South Carolina Center for Rural and Primary Healthcare. Please join us for today's topic.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Growing Rural Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kevin Bennett. Today, we will be discussing oral health and dental care across our state. Our guest today is Dr. Amy Martin. Dr. Martin is a professor and director for the Division of Population Oral Health at the James B. Edwards College of Dental Medicine at the Medical University of South Carolina. Welcome, Dr. Martin.
Thank you.
So start us off by just telling us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up and just how you got to be who you are today and what you're doing now.
So I grew up in the foothills of North Carolina, which is why the accent sounds as it does. I actually grew up in a rural part of Gaston County, not far from Charlotte. My dad was a manufacturer's rep, and so I got to grow up in a collection of textile mill villages that no longer exist because, of course, that industry dried up. But it was a wonderful place to grow up because I got to see what rural manufacturing looked like, and it really influenced my career choices and career path. My family's from South Carolina, a small town called Utahville, where they grow cotton. So I got to see the entire life cycle of that industry and a really stark contrast between two different rural economies and rural cultures that imprinted on my professional pathway.
So one agricultural and one manufacturing?
Yep.
So what are some of the differences that you saw between those two communities?
Certainly the way people lived in Utahville. It's a beautiful, still remains a very beautiful lakeside community with lots and lots of land. And in Gaston County, if you can imagine clusters of homes that are all built identically, because back then when the village was established by the different textile mills, they had one blueprint and right. They built clusters of homes. And actually, if you ride around rural South Carolina, you can see many of them are becoming regentrified now, but you can see in places like Greenwood, Abbeville, Chester, Fairfield, you see a lot of the remnants of these types of villages and how those structures still really provide a skeletal footprint of what that community looked like.
And those were probably built or subsidized by the factory or
yep.
the mill or whatever?
Yep.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So you're now working primarily in oral and dental health. How
Correct.
Did you end up in that field?
By accident. So my entire professional career has been in rural. I started working for a rural hospital in Bamberg, South Carolina. I've served the State Office of Rural Health and was deputy director for the state's Rural Health Research Center for 10 years. When I was at the Rural Health Research Center, I had gotten a call from our state's public health agency, particularly their Division of Oral Health. They needed some analytical support. And I said, I know I go to the dentist every 6 months. Beyond that, I don't know much about oral health. And they assured me not to worry about it. They would teach me that part. They needed the methodology. So that was in 2006. And the more I became a student of oral health, the more fascinated I became about it. And quite honestly, became a little embarrassed. I'd been spending all these years trying to address some of the inequities that we see in rural systemic diseases like diabetes, preterm labor and birth complications, HIV, I did not realize the degree to which oral health directly impacts those types of conditions and the role that addressing oral health needs plays in ameliorating some of those inequities and some of the complex clinical outcomes that can result as a result of poorly managed systemic disease. So that was it for me. I was hooked.
So how does oral health tie into, say, diabetes? How are they related?
Sure. So it's important to know that it is not a single directional relationship, that like most complicated systemic diseases, when one's not working, the other makes it worse if it's not being addressed.
Right.
So particularly as it relates to diabetes, one of the principal underlying connections is inflammation. When you
okay.
have diabetes, and you have inflammation, that's not good. But what a lot of folks don't understand is inflammation oftentimes starts in the mouth. Mm-hmm. And it usually begins in the form of gingivitis. It can quickly move into periodontitis, which is what a lot of people refer to as gum disease. They have bleeding gums, loose teeth. And it is that periodontitis that if it is not properly managed, can be one of the triggers for keeping an A1C or a blood sugar level from poorly being regulated.
So that can become systematic. And
absolutely. Absolutely. Now, getting oral health doesn't necessarily bring that A1C into check, but you're not going to get that A1C into check if oral health is not a part of your comprehensive diabetes management plan.
So to avoid that periodontitis, how do you, is it just regular checkups? What are the...
Brush, floss your teeth. Fortunately, it's not rocket science when you think about your daily hygiene. But the other piece, absolutely, is your diet. Mm-hmm. Diet is so important, making sure that you're limiting sugar. Just like if you have diabetes or are pre-diabetic, watch your sugar, watch your carbs. Eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. We also know that the microbiome in your mouth is really important. And for some of us are fortunate enough that even if we don't eat well, we have a lot of commensal organisms in our mouth, which are basically
healthy bacteria.
And what we do in dentistry sometimes that's unfortunate is we'll have an abscess or we'll see gum disease, and the reaction is, oh, we need to treat it with antibiotics. Well, that might be appropriate for most patients, but for those of us who have good bacteria, where it's like slashing and burning pine forests, we're killing off all the good bacteria, which is making a healthy mouth unhealthy just inadvertently.
Gotcha.
But we have not come up with a really good test yet to determine who has sort of naturally occurring healthy bacteria versus those who don't. So in the meantime, brush, floss, eat healthy.
Every day.
Every day.
Not just the week before going
to the dentist. Nope, every day.
So you mentioned some of the rampant disparities in oral and dental health across the state. Mm-hmm. Walk us through what that looks like.
Yeah, so we're lucky in many ways for kids. While we do see some disparities in kids, we have a really pretty nicely woven dental safety net for kids, especially even in rural. We've got a good network of dental clinics that are run by community health centers, which oftentimes are more financially accessible. But we also have a really good network of private practicing dentists who participate in Medicaid. So if you talk to dentists, they may say that Medicaid's not the best payer of services, and they wouldn't be wrong. But when you compare South Carolina to the other states in the country, we actually have a really good dental benefit, a good reimbursement fee schedule for Medicaid, which is attractive. And if you're a private practice dentist in rural South Carolina, it's going to be difficult for you not to also provide services to people enrolled in Medicaid, because it's a big part of your community.
Right.
So it's a
high enough repayment or reimbursement that they're willing to provide that service.
And kids are usually, certainly we have disease in kids. We have too much disease in kids. Usually about 1 in 4 kids have some threshold of dental disease or cavities by a young age, 6. But for the most part, we don't do terrible compared to other states. It's when you get into working age adults and adults in Medicare, particularly for rural, that you see really pretty robust disparities. And it shouldn't surprise folks, because we also see lying on top of that other disparities like the conditions we just mentioned, which just sort of exacerbate all of those issues. And while Medicaid provides really good coverage for kids, we do need to strengthen the benefit for adults. And right. in South Carolina, we at least have a benefit, but it will right now only pay for one cleaning each year okay. and up to $750 worth of services, which is basic restorations. And oftentimes, unfortunately, that results in teeth being pulled rather than being treated.
Right, just because of the cost.
That's right.
And most working age adults just don't have Medicaid. Is that correct?
That's true. And dental insurance is not medical insurance.
Right.
it doesn't cover even private practice, or rather privately insured products. There's usually a pretty high copay, a pretty mm-hmm. high deductible, and even those of us who can afford to pay out of pocket for dental care, it gets expensive very quickly. And right. so oftentimes what we see in particularly in rural, is it is the cost that's principally the barrier in seeking care, and less so availability of providers.
So it's that point of care cost of
that's
getting
right.
services.
That's
so
right.
Why is dental care not a priority among folks? You know, I think folks would delay medical care mm-hmm. Due to cost. That's well documented, but mm-hmm. it seems like dental care might be a higher rate of that. Why is that?
I think some of it's cultural. Mm-hmm. Dental disease, dental problems is a slow drip. It's not a sudden heart attack. It's not right. a cancer diagnosis. It's not those scary conditions where all of a sudden you go from being asymptomatic to being catastrophically symptomatic.
Right.
That can happen, but usually it's the slow drip of years of foregoing care. And you don't realize that you have real problems until you have an abscess, an infection, tooth pain, tooth loss. Yep. And then once you've reached that point, when you go in for care, of course, it becomes insanely expensive.
Right, because you've delayed care for so long.
That's right, that's right. And so we see that. We also see in some market analysis that we get from the American Dental Association, we see a value issue as well, where most people, this isn't unique to rural, but generally speaking, people start to question the cost relative to the value of the service.
Right.
And they question, why do I want to go in and pay $2,000 for a tooth that, and unfortunately, this might be fatalistic thinking, that I'm going to lose anyhow.
Right. Okay.
So there is this trade-off proposition of value, and almost, this is unique in rural, almost an expectation. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to lose them anyhow. So
it's a cultural
it
norm
can,
almost.
That can be. That okay. can be. Not always, but it can be.
That's a factor.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what are some other kind of emerging priorities or issues that you see coming in regards to dental and oral health?
So the really good news is some emerging priorities are really being developed around integrated care models and oral health interprofessional practice. And this is where...
So tell me what that is. That's
sure,
a lot of words.
Sure, it is a lot of words. And I'll say that it is in this space where I think rural can actually outperform urban. So this will be the good news for our rural providers and systems. So there is a difference between integrated care and interprofessional care, and I'll start with the latter. Interprofessional practice are those services that a primary care provider can provide within their own scope of practice. So family medicine doctors, mm-hmm. pediatric providers, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, there are services within their scope of practice that they can provide leadership on, things like doing oral health risk assessments.
Okay.
And those can include questionnaires around social determinants of health, home hygiene, home oral health practices and diet and smoking behaviors. But it's also a visual clinical exam. So if you have a child and your child is going in for routine, ongoing well child visits, you may or may not notice that those clinicians are looking in the mouths. It used to be they looked past the teeth and just into the throat,
right,
and now
right.
they're actually looking at dentition and gum okay. tissue, which is great. And they can also apply fluoride varnish. So kids who are at risk for early childhood caries, maybe their homes or schools are on well water and not public water.
So they're not fluoridated.
They're not getting proper levels of fluoride. They can apply that varnish. So that's all wonderful.
So that's basically first line dental screening and care provided in a medical setting.
That is exactly right.
What kind of training is provided? Because I don't think they get that in residency typically.
So they are getting some training as medical schools, nurse programs, PA programs are modernizing their skill set. They are getting fluoride varnishing and risk assessing in their curriculum.
Okay,
it's been a slow roll because there needs to be a companion business strategy that goes with that.
Meaning they have to be paid for that.
They have to be paid for that, correct. The other sort of force that's facilitating the adoption of oral health interprofessional practice is a concept called patient-centered medical homes. Mm-hmm. And providers get an enhanced reimbursement if they are considered to be a patient-centered medical home. Mm-hmm. And in 2017, the accrediting entity that deems you to be a patient-centered medical home has now three required oral health standards.
Okay.
And so that's been another imperative to sort of facilitate both training programs and existing practitioners to adopt that into their clinical practice standards.
And if they have patient-centered medical home status, they often have enhanced reimbursement from various groups, Medicaid and private payers.
That's right.
So that's a way to incentivize that behavior.
That's exactly right. It is still, even though that's wonderful, oftentimes that's the introduction and the gateway into ongoing dental services.
Right.
But it is not a replacement for getting good routine dental care.
So if they were to see an issue on an exam, they would refer.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. They're not doing x-rays. They're not diagnosing. Right. They're just looking for the normal healthy development of a kid's mouth. And usually it is contextualized with diet.
Gotcha.
Pediatric diet. Because we know once you turn the sugar bugs on in the mouth, that trajectory has started for a lifetime.
Right. It's hard to turn around.
That really is. Now, integrated care is a different level. Mm-hmm. This is the active collaborative referral relationship between primary care and dentistry.
Okay.
And this is a space we've spent a lot of research energy in. We've piloted some models in four rural communities across the state, places like Florence, Winnsboro in Fairfield County, as well as in York County and Santee and St. George. So that's been a fascinating experience.
And what are those pilot projects? What do they do?
So what we have done is we've started with primary care partners in these communities to help them really improve their oral health interprofessional practice standards.
Okay. And so doing the exams.
Doing those exams and the varnishing. And then we have worked with local private practice dentists to help them become a calibrated member of the broader healthcare system. What we're finding post the Great Recession of 2008 through 2012 is dental visits went down precipitously.
Right.
They have not rebounded. So dentists economically are motivated to be partners in a system that they've not been motivated to be in.
Because they didn't have to be. So now they're trying to get more referrals. And
that's
more
right. But also, what they are finding in a post-Affordable Care Act world is the rapid retraction of primary care in their communities as well. And so what a lot of private practice dentists are finding is patients are coming to them not for medical reasons, or rather not for dental reasons, but for medical questions.
Interesting.
And so the dentist is now in a unique position in rural, particularly rural South Carolina and some of these places, to not just address the oral health needs of people in their community, but really help them gain connection to primary care partners as well. So this interesting change in the dynamic of rural healthcare systems has really forced primary care and dentists to come together in a unique way.
Okay.
The challenge has been calibration of language and expectations. So dentistry has historically sort of been walled off as a niche industry within healthcare. And given what we now know about the importance of oral health as it relates to other conditions, those walls are coming down quickly.
Okay.
And it's been great to see in these communities I just mentioned how these two parts of the rural healthcare system come together to communicate differently and really work together on shared patient goals, not just at the individual patient level, right. but how do we address the overall health disparities in communities and what role does oral health play in that? It's interesting. Really cool to watch.
So why has that integration not occurred in the past, do you think?
So cynically, payment's been one issue, because dentists get paid to do procedures, not to do education,
right.
and certainly engage with providers. These dentists that we've been working with in these four communities have learned that even though they may not get reimbursed, to send their hygienist over to a primary care practice to do something necessarily, they are getting more patient traffic. So, and patients are staying in those practices more because they see the dentist as an extension now of healthcare services okay. rather than something that's optional. So it's been this slow roll of culture change in these settings that have really benefited both the patient and mm-hmm. certainly the provider. But our friends in places like Medicaid and Blue Cross Blue Shield, people who pay for services, are learning the financial rewards and the cost savings
right.
By bringing primary care and dentistry together.
So are there any current issues statewide or especially rural about workforce? Do we
sure.
have enough dentists and hygienists and those types of things?
Great question. So when I look at the data now, mm-hmm. we're good on hygienists.
Okay.
The market's pretty full with hygienists. There'll always be a need for that. So I would never want to deter somebody from pursuing that as an occupation because it's tough. It's physical. It's physically tough.
Right.
I don't know the average tenure, but it's a physical toll on the frame to clean teeth every day for sure.
Right.
In terms of dentists, I'll tell you that all but three of our counties are classified as dental health professional shortage areas.
Mm-hmm.
We're not always as concerned about those designations because we don't really know what that means all the time.
Right, right.
I will say this, as a faculty member of the state's only dental school, we get a lot of kids from rural communities in South Carolina applying to dental school, and I'm super excited to report, if I had to guess, it would be somewhere between 25% and 30% of our current enrollment is from rural South Carolina.
That's great.
And oftentimes, they want to go back to
right.
work in these rural communities. They love that sense of community.
Mm-hmm.
They still have the vision of being either in solo practice or in small practice where they're running their own business.
Right,
that's still
right.
the dream. Our challenge in getting those graduates back to South Carolina, or rather back to rural communities in South Carolina, is when they graduate, they're saddled with an obscene amount of debt.
Right.
The average in-state debt load now is somewhere between $220,000 and $250,000. That's $220,000 and $250,000
right.
in education debt.
So once you graduate, you have got that.
You've got that. And if you're out of state, you're averaging $500,000
okay.
before you've seen the first patient. So
okay.
That when they start running market analysis numbers, then that starts to make them nervous. Am I going to be able to make my student loan payment? So that's
right.
usually the first threat.
Especially if they go to a rural area with higher Medicaid.
That's
or
right.
uninsured.
That's right. The second big threat is when they go back to rural communities and they look at rural practices, there's a stark change between those practice settings and how we've educated them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which are urban settings typically.
And we don't train on paper records. We have electronic records.
Right.
We use digital dentistry tools. And both of those are very expensive when
mm-hmm.
you're a solo practice, private practice model. It's very difficult to keep a dental practice modern because dentistry is an expensive profession and it's an expensive business.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some nervousness about going to a setting where you've basically got to relearn the business and charting of patient care and use different tools.
Almost stepping back in time.
That's right. And I think you're going to speak with Graham Adams. The State Office of Rural Health has a revolving loan fund program that historically,
mm-hmm.
most of those dollars have gone into assisting rural primary care practices or rural hospitals. hospitals. Mm-hmm. So our school is in active communications with Graham Adams about, okay, how do we equip our students and rural private dentists with resources so that they can modernize their practices that will make it more appealing for our students to go into these settings, because they're not going to qualify for loans in the marketplace when you're 25, 26, 27 years old and somewhere between a quarter and $1 million in debt.
Right. It has to be somehow subsidized by another program.
That's right. But it is not a lack of, it's not a lack of our graduates wanting to go into rural. And that's good news for the profession. They really are excited about it, but it's resourcing them properly.
And there's structural barriers to that practice.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Do you train in rural areas? Like medical schools will have clerkships or rotations in rural settings. Do you do that with the dental school?
It's very difficult to do that.
Okay.
We do have some, they're called enhanced learning mm-hmm. opportunities, where our dental students will go into some of the smaller sea barrier island communities that are within an hour's drive of Charleston, or go up the coast into Georgetown or Horry. We have a wonderful alumnus who runs a free clinic in Greenville County. She'll host our students who will go up there and do a two-week rotation.
Okay.
But the density of a undergraduate dental education curriculum is such that they can't be gone long.
Okay.
You know, people like to compare dentistry, dental education, and medical education, and they are very, very different. If you're in medical school, when you complete 4 years of medical school, congratulations, now you're going to residency, and then you're going
more
to fellowship.
Training.
There's
right.
more and more training. Whereas in dentistry, you get 4 years, and at the end of 4 years, you are licensed to surgically cut people.
Right.
So because of that, the density of clinical education is tough.
So the travel time to go out is
takes away from it. Also, ensuring that they get a broad range of clinical experiences. You don't normally get that in rural, whereas mm-hmm. you will get that in an urban setting.
Right,
so
right.
that makes it very difficult. Now, we do have greater flexibility with our residents,
mm-hmm.
and we are in conversations right now for some of our more primary care or disease management residency programs, where we are going to partner with some community health centers and some other community-based sites so that our residents can grow that skill set and enhance their learning opportunity.
And you mean medical residents?
I mean dental.
Dental residents.
Residents.
Okay.
We have developed a curriculum. It's not a perfect antidote to limited rural community exposure, but we have developed a certificate program in dental safety net practice.
Okay.
And it's 4 courses, and we have really good participation in our dental students. It's oral health policy and mm-hmm. how to advocate for public policy as well as community-based policies. The second is leadership in rural systems for our dentists.
Yeah.
It's practice management in rural and safety net systems, so that folks, our students, will understand the business nuances of practicing dentistry in rural and underserved communities.
Right.
And then last but not least is an interprofessional course we had originally designed only for our dental students, but the lid came off, and it's pharmacy and medicine and nursing and PA and our dental students. It doesn't have the sexiest of titles, but mm-hmm. it's called Poverty and the Impact on Healthcare Consumerism.
Hmm. That would be interesting.
It is not theoretically driven. We do introduce social determinants of health, but it's more teaching empathy as a clinical skill.
Hmm.
So, yeah, we would love for every patient to brush, floss, go to the dentist every 6 months.
Right.
But for people living in poverty, that might not be a reasonable expectation. So how do you negotiate and empower patients and communities to do what they can? What's
right.
achievable?
Right.
Maybe it's just not drinking Mountain Dew before you go to bed.
Right. Or in the baby bottle.
Right. Yes.
So what is going on in the state as far as programs or initiatives to try to address some of these gaps?
Sure. So the College of Dental Medicine is a great place for us to develop and pilot test some demonstration initiatives. The usual pathway for that is we'll incubate a concept, analyze it, see if it's working, and then share that with our partners at DHEC, mm-hmm. the Division of Oral Health at DHEC, the State Dental Association, and Medicaid. Those are our usual partners, and the State Office of Rural Health
right.
for broader scale replication. And so I'll just highlight a couple of really cool things that we're working on right now. We're primarily focusing a lot of efforts right now in the PD region. Okay. When you cut the state in its four geopolitical regions of PD, Lowcountry, Midlands, and Upstate, it's the PD that literally has 50% of the available dental workforce in the rest of the states. And and you'll also see that's where our greatest oral health inequities exist,
right.
as you would expect when you don't have enough providers.
Right.
So we've gotten some federal grants to really partner with some key folks there and have used those federal dollars to leverage a partnership with the Duke Endowment.
Okay.
And a couple of those demonstrations include a partnership with McLeod. So McLeod's Rural Family
in
Florence, their Rural Family Medicine Residency Program has been a long friend of ours down at MUSC. Their program is led by a gentleman named Dr. Gerald Bailey. He has a real passion for oral health and what he can do as a family medicine physician to address it. So we began partnering a long time ago, wrote up some case studies, and it just became apparent that in order to improve clinical outcomes for his patients who live in rural remote corners of Florence County, he needed a dentist.
Mm.
So we got some funding from the Duke Endowment, and they have created within their family medicine residency program a dental practice.
Mm.
So they just hired their very first within the family medicine program. So they have hired a new rural dental medicine faculty member.
Mm.
The absolute most perfect person. She will have an appointment with us in the College of Dental Medicine so that we can send our dental students and residents to rotate with them. But they have a three-chair operatory that is co-located in the family medicine residency program. It is not their intention to be the dental home for all people in Florence County, but for the underserved patients in that family medicine residency program.
Okay.
They're intervening, and it's really super cool because when she's not seeing patients,
mm-hmm.
then she is teaching the residents what they can do within scope of practice.
Which we talked about earlier.
That's right, and how to identify visually what does inflammation in the mouth look like? What does disease in the mouth look like? And then what can you do about it as a physician?
Yeah, fascinating.
Yep, so that's one initiative. We are also taking the curriculum that I mentioned that we're implementing for our dental students.
Mm-hmm.
We have repackaged it for continuing education.
Okay.
And so we are working right now with 10, soon to be 20, dentists in the PD to facilitate their completion of that certificate program in the hopes that we will impart a new business acumen and expectation for success in the hopes that we're going to retain them in the rural PD.
So sustainability.
That's exactly right. So we're excited about that work. That just got started.
Okay.
And then last but not least, we are the technical assistance and program office basically for the Duke Endowment's oral health portfolio. So we are partnering with East Carolina University and facilitating funding for the expansion of school-based oral health programs in rural North and South Carolina.
Okay.
So we have funded...
So care in a school setting.
That's exactly right. So we've funded 10 programs already in both states, 3 in our state, 7 in North Carolina, just because North Carolina is a bigger state. And we are looking at funding another cohort of 10. We'll make those funding decisions this month. And those programs right now, the existing cohort of 10, we're looking at reaching almost 200,000 students
wow.
in rural communities across our two states that did not have care to begin with.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
Pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good.
Yeah.
So beyond diabetes, are there any other health-related conditions that dental and oral health exacerbates or...
Sure. So South Carolina is nationally ranked in an unfavorable way with the rate of HIV, particularly in the rural communities of our state. And what we know about HIV and oral health is treatment of the disease is less effective if oral health goes unaddressed.
Okay.
The medications that folks who have HIV have to take require the intake of food, that requires the chewing of food.
And if your oral health is an issue, that's a problem.
It's a problem. If you're in, if you have mouth pain and you're on a liquid diet or a soft food diet, it potentially undermines the effectiveness of the drug therapies that folks need to live with HIV. So that's something we're very sensitive to. Ryan White, which is the program that principally provide services or reimburses for care for people who have AIDS or HIV positive, there is a dental benefit.
Okay.
And so there is a way to get care. And most of our community health centers that have dental programs also participate in Ryan White programs.
So they can do both.
That's right. Okay. So I would encourage anybody who's listening and are concerned about that patient population and their oral health needs, really look closely at your local community health center and find out if they've got a dental program for sure.
Right, and specifically with Ryan White.
That's right.
Okay.
That's
Which,
right.
If you have HIV, you probably are aware of.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The other condition that we're spending a lot of time and energy addressing is oral cancers, head, neck, throat cancers. What we're learning, what we already know about cervical cancer is many of these head and neck cancers are linked to HPV.
Interesting.
And
not as much tobacco, which would have been my thought.
Yeah, tobacco certainly is a player. Yeah. Tobacco certainly can turn on predisposing cancer cells in the throat and oral cavity, just like it would in the lung tissue. But it is that HPV is just a bad virus for developing of head and neck cancers. And our concern is getting screened. We'd like to see more screening behaviors by not just primary care providers, but dentists as well to catch it early.
Right.
And it's something that can get caught during a routine exam. And oftentimes, adults in particular who are not going in for those regular dental visits,
they're not getting screened.
Not till you feel that lump in your throat or some other symptom that you realize, goodness, something must be off. Usually it's an adult disease. Usually, particularly, it's disproportionately affects middle-aged men. We have seen a decrease in kids. We speculate, because we don't know, but we speculate the HPV vaccine is playing an important role in the decreasing rate of head and neck cancers we see in kids.
That makes sense.
Certainly, if you come down to our children's hospital or even the children's hospital here in Columbia, you can have the lateral transmission of HPV, and oftentimes what happens is children will have difficulty in speech or swallowing, and we think it's something else, and what it can be is warts that have developed on the pharynx that we diagnose in other ways, and ultimately it is that. There is treatment for that. And we were seeing a rise in the expression of those, but with the Gardasil vaccine, we're seeing
it's
a decrease. Yep.
So
our ENT team in Charleston doesn't have the data, but they are convinced the vaccine's playing a great role in that. That's right.
So go get the Gardasil for your kids.
Yep.
Is that recommended for adults?
It's my understanding those age limits are increasing. It used to just be teens, but now we're into the young adult years.
We're starting to see the efficacy. So
that's right.
A broader recommendation.
That's right.
So ask your doctors about Gardasil.
Yep.
We're not sponsored in any way.
Yes.
But please vaccinate.
Yes.
So we've talked a lot about challenges in the rural states, oral providers, et cetera. But what else do you see that is positive about rural South Carolina?
We're very lucky in that we have such a fantastic network of committed dentists working in rural South Carolina. Mm-hmm. While we've seen the retraction of primary care offices,
right,
we've not seen that in dentistry, which is great.
Is that unique in our state? Is that not seen across the country?
Or? That's a good question. I would say dentistry is just very different. I think we're not too dissimilar from other states.
Okay.
Dentistry, because it is organized and financed differently than mm-hmm. medicine, and has more opportunities to work as a small business, and the fact that patients don't usually change dentists as quickly as they change physicians,
right.
It's a more viable business model.
It's more stable.
It's a more stable business okay. model. It's just way more expensive to operate.
Right, and to go to.
Out of
pocket.
So, but I would say that is probably our single greatest asset is the commitment of the existing workforce. Our concern as a training institution is what that looks like 15, 20 years out.
Right.
And so that's why we're placing priority on giving our students and our residents business tools, visions on how they can operate as a single solo practice, but also how they can connect and be an engaged partner in local rural healthcare systems, because that's the only way we're going to maintain the existing footprint is to have them truly integrated into the system.
Mm-hmm.
And by integration, that's got to come with policy facilitation as well. So making sure that the practice acts don't inhibit collaborative practice and insurance reimbursement, whether
right.
it be public or private, incentivize the types of behaviors we want them to see.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So I asked this of all our guests. There are many definitions of rural. You're very familiar with that.
Many definitions.
I think our last count was 76, mm-hmm. infamously.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to define rural, especially mm-hmm. rural South Carolina, to mm-hmm. someone who wasn't really familiar with it, how would you describe to them what rural, especially rural South Carolina, is?
Sure. I would take more of a qualitative definition.
That's good.
I would base it more culturally.
Mm-hmm.
I would define it as a community that has a specific sense of identity,
mm-hmm.
a specific vision, usually fairly self-reliant, not necessarily at the individual person level, but at the individual community level. That would be how I would see it. You know, I spend a lot of time in a car riding around the back roads of South Carolina.
Right.
And it's interesting to me, you know, when you're driving into a rural town, there
right.
is a clear demarcation of being in the middle of nowhere versus being in a rural community.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's a cluster of dilapidated buildings, you know I'm in this town.
Right.
When I ride around Charleston or Columbia, those lines are blurred.
Right.
You don't have the same sense of community. So I guess I would define it as a well geographically defined area that has a strong sense of culture, direction, and sense of self.
For more information on Dr. Martin and her work, please visit our show notes. We'll have links for you there to find out more. So that's all for today. Stay tuned for more episodes coming out soon. If you have ideas for guests you'd like to hear on our program, please reach out to us. We'd like to hear from you.
Thanks for listening to the Growing Rural Podcast. If you found the content valuable, please leave a rating on iTunes or Spotify so others can find us. For more information, please visit our website at sc.edu/ruralhealthcare or follow us on Twitter at sc_CRPH. This was recorded at the University of South Carolina School of Medicine in Columbia. It is edited and produced by Sean Riffle. Y'all take care.